I have a confession, Tristan, that I want to send your way really quickly.
Uh-oh.
And that is that for Father's Day, which happened very recently at the time of this recording. By the time you're listening to this, Father's Day is like 6 months ago. But at the time we're recording, Father's Day was very recent. And I bought my hopefully eventually father-in-law a good amount of whiskey because he wants to get into whiskey. And while I was at the store, I got myself some. And I do not like the taste of whiskey very much, but that is not stopping me from drinking it because I got a whole bunch of like fancy whiskey glasses and like things to make old fashions and things like that. So I'm coming down off of it, but I'm a little buzzed right now.
Sweet.
And I'm wondering how that's going to impact the quality of my commentary on this podcast.
Will it go up or down? We'll probably have Will to hear it go?
I feel like it can only go up, honestly. So we'll see.
I like that you are like kind of like the people who try to make themselves resist poison by just like drinking it. you're working. You're like, I'm going to force myself to like whiskey.
That's exactly right. Well, so I just get into some stuff really hard. And so I just liked similar to Emily's dad, who does not know anything about whiskey, but just likes the concept of it. I'm the same way. So I just jumped in real hard and I was like, I'll buy these glasses, these nice fancy glasses. I'll buy all these like mixers to make cool drinks. And then I got the actual whiskey and I was like, oh no, I don't like this. This is bad, but I spent money on it. So I really should drink it.
This summer, White Claw came to Canada. And so on much the other end of the spectrum, I'm like, now Canada's having its hard seltzer moment, like I think you guys had probably like a year or two ago.
Yes.
So I am just knocking back White Claw.
Yeah, no laws with White Claws. That's what they say.
Oh boy. So yeah, that's fun. But this is a show about aliens or about the lack thereof.
This is a show about aliens. Welcome to a show called It's Probably Not Aliens. My name is Scott. I know nothing. I am a dunce in this scenario, and I'm especially so because I'm a little buzzy right now, so bear with me. But Tristan, on the other hand, is not a dunce. He's a very smart boy.
I'm a person who reads very fast the day before we record these shows so that I can say something smart about things.
That's right. And yeah, we're a podcast all about looking through ancient aliens and ancient astronaut theories, trying to debunk or even confirm sometimes, who knows, all of these theories and learn about the ancient civilizations that these stories and theories talk about. And we've got a lot of fun stuff to this. Is kind of a different episode, isn't it, Tristan?
Yeah, because as I do these, so some of these topics are well-researched, solid, like there's a lot of stuff that's been done in this area of responding to ancient aliens. And so there's a lot of research to draw upon sometimes. But occasionally I come across something that it comes down to essentially the ancient aliens guys just looked at a thing and then went, look at that. That's an alien. And then move on without a whole lot of like explanation or any sort of way to answer why.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look them up, though, they also end up being things like when you research them, you're like, oh, this is the thing they said is aliens. Okay. And then you look it up and it's just like a normal thing. But yeah, No one's really done a whole lot of the legwork to say that this is explicitly not aliens, which I guess is my job.
Yeah.
But a lot of times their argument is just, well, look at that. That's weird. Must be aliens.
Must be aliens. So we've got a good selection of little, it's like a grab bag episode. It's a little grab bag of multiple different little things that we can explore.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing it with the power of alcohol, at least on one person's end. So
yeah, I should have gotten if I had known that was a prerequisite.
It would have been a whole new world of podcasting.
That's because of the magic carpet.
Because we're going to talk about magic carpets in a little bit.
Yeah. So we're doing three today. And yeah, I've got three different objects. Some of them are actually like very iconic within the ancient alien movement, and two of them are just like, oh, this is the thing, could be aliens. So sure. The first one I think is one that we probably is the one that we're going into, which is the Cumbaya airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Did we find an airplane, a little golden trinket of an airplane near Bogota? Or the other one is, did the Zapotec people have Vimana airports? They brought the Vimanas in here.
Ah, we've talked about Vimanas before. Yeah,
at the mysterious site of Monte Alban.
Interesting.
And the other one is, did the biblical King Solomon have a flying machine?
These are all three connected in a strange way of ancient flying technology or something revolving around flying. I'm excited.
Yeah, I was hoping to get when I was going to do a grab bag episode, to grab three things that had sort of a similar theme. So let's talk about the first one we're going to get into, which is the Kimbaya airplanes.
Tell me about these airplanes.
All right. So there was a group of golden artifacts that were found in the early 1900s near the city of Bogota in the country of Colombia. Research on these things have shown that they were made about 1,000 years ago.
Wow.
And that all of them are designed to look like different types of animals. There's birds, there's insects, there's all sorts of stuff. But some of them, if you are to look at them with, you know, your modern eyes, they look quite convincingly like airplanes.
Ah, the scariest animal of all.
Yeah, similar to the That Fucking Bird episode we did last time. There's the big issue, which is that this thing looks like a bird, kind of, but it does have sort of a rounded nose. The wings look kind of more airplane-like, and the tail is vertical instead of horizontal, which, you know, as we know about birds, they do not have that.
They do not have that.
So Ancient Aliens takes this and says, well, this must be the sign of some sort of advanced civilization, because it's literally a gold airplane. And this is where we got to see one of my favorite things ever made on Ancient Aliens, which is where they converted the golden airplane. They made a remake of it as a little remote controlled airplane.
Yeah.
So that they could fly it around to show that it was capable of flying.
Yeah. If you put an engine inside of it, it's capable of flying around.
Yeah. But that's how you know it's an airplane. And especially if you look at the thing that they made, they did make a couple creative choices that are different from the actual airplane, the actual artifacts. They got rid of a lot of like the detailing and stuff like that to show, like to say they got rid of a bunch of swirly stuff on the wings in order to turn it into a straight airplane wing, which, you know,
sure.
might be something to consider.
Selective scaling up of the trinket. Yeah.
It's just science. But like, this is based on an experiment that happened in 1994, where this guy named Peter Belting and another guy named Konrad Lubbers, very German names.
Very much so.
They made a radio controlled scale model of these objects to show that they could fly. But as I mentioned, the way that it was described to me lacked some convoluted features present in the real figurines.
Convoluted figures. Interesting.
But they did show that, yeah, if you put an engine on something that has wings, it can fly.
Yeah. You know, it does remind me, actually, I have no idea how true this is, but it's ringing bells on another documentary that I watched ages ago about alien technology or future technology, which is this idea that if you get any object to go fast enough, technically it can fly. Like, you can make a brick go fast enough to fly, and it doesn't have to be shaped in an interesting way. And it feels very much in that, pardon the pun, I guess, but it feels very much in that wing of thought where it's like, yes, if we put an engine on this thing, it can fly. Shock and surprise.
I know. But what we can do to talk about this, because it is like a little, they do look a little weird. At first glance, you're like, what the hell is this thing? This is like, if you were to look at one of these Kimbaya airplanes, the first instinct would be like, oh yeah, that looks like an airplane.
Yeah.
So like, I get where they're coming from.
Okay.
And so their claim is that it's basically something called a out of place artifact, which is essentially a term for when something has been found that shows a very different level of development and tries to challenge our chronology of it by some kind. Sometimes it's like, yeah, finding too advanced technology in ancient times.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some more like logical ones than this. Like one that I came across recently when I was just bored and reading about dinosaurs for some reason.
Sure.
I found out that it's still fringe, but has a bit more scientific backing than this, that some dinosaurs might have, non-avian dinosaurs, survived the asteroid impact for a few million years.
Interesting. I thought you were going to talk about how there was some ancient technology in the dinosaur days, and I would have been like, hey, bud, ever heard of Flintstones? They're real.
I think there's an episode of Star Trek Voyager. Like, one of them, like, they find out that I think like the, what's that alien, what's that dinosaur called? The Parasaurolophus, the one that's got the big like banana shaped thing coming out the back of its head.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That hadrosaur evolved into humanoid aliens and then they left Earth and then humans evolved later. And
oh, fascinating.
The whole joke is that the humans meet the aliens and the aliens are like hardcore religious and don't believe, they believe that this like, this region they're in was made by their creators to be just for them. And so they don't believe like there's like this fringe theory that that they came from another planet called Earth.
Oh man.
And so it's like a whole metaphor about evolution being done by dinosaurs. It's like, it's perfect.
That's fit. Man, I got to watch more Star Trek.
Yeah, it's great, even when it's bonkers. but a lot of times these things show up. Another one that we probably will get into in a different episode is the Antikythera mechanism, which was found in the Mediterranean. It's sort of like a thing for calculating the phases of the planets and the moons and stars and stuff for astrological stuff. But by finding it, it did seem like it was like very far in advance of the technology of the day.
Yeah, that one's definitely come up a couple times on Ancient Aliens. I'd be interested to do an episode about it.
Mm-hmm. So, and they also go by the wonderful name of Ooparts.
Ooparts. Oop. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
But many of them are cases where either something has gotten mixed up, like for example, in the case of the dinosaurs, as we were talking about before, sometimes because of plate tectonics or mud or something like that, dinosaur fossil will get moved from where it was originally and put somewhere else that might technically be after the dinosaur, the extinction line.
Oh, I
and
see. Might, I see. Yeah,
this will lead people to think this is the most conventional theory as to like, why are these dinosaurs after the big extinction line? And it's like, well, their bones might have just shifted sometime after that.
Gotcha.
Or it's like some sort of mistaken interpretation.
Okay.
Like this case, I'm going to say, spoiler alert, this is a mistaken interpretation, but also a misunderstanding of possibly how advanced the civilization was. Like a lot of times you see on Ancient Aliens, like, oh, they couldn't have possibly have done something like this with the knowledge and tools that they had before. But that's just shows that they just don't understand how resourceful and sophisticated people can be.
Absolutely. They underestimate the level of advancement of these civilizations.
And another one that comes up very often that I don't think we've gotten into, but I imagine played a role in a few of our previous episodes and probably will in the future, which is oftentimes artifacts are like locked away and they're not really super easy to get your hands on.
Yeah.
Or they've been destroyed or something or another like that.
Sure.
And so fairly often when you're doing research on archaeology, much like we are, because we haven't gone to museums to do research for this show yet, we are working off of descriptions by other people. And so if there is an inaccurate description or if somebody uses language that is, you know, slightly flowery or interesting, especially if you like think about like the archaeology of old Victorian people and such, then you can draw a conclusion based on their descriptions of an object without, you know, actually being able to see it yourself.
That's interesting. It's like a little game of telephone where you hear it from someone and you make your own interpretation and someone says some other way and suddenly your multiple descriptions removed from the actual thing that you've not even had an opportunity to lay your eyes on.
Precisely. So these current objects are in the Gold Museum in the city of Bogota, and they're described as being birds and insects, but people will say the tail's vertical, so it can't be a bird or insect. But I did find out about another kind of creature that has sort of something like wings and has a vertical tail.
Okay.
And that is fish.
Never heard of them.
Yeah.
What are those?
So if you look at the thing, if you look at the Kimbaya quote unquote airplanes and you really look at the sort of features of them, you could come to the conclusion that it could be an airplane or it could be a stylized carving of a fish.
What are fish if not airplanes of the sea? I've always said that.
It's true. Have you ever seen those ones that can like jump out and like they fly kind of?
Yeah, they fly a little bit. They're very, I mean, like planes, fish have to be kind of aerodynamic or I guess hydrodynamic. I don't know. But
they move through a fluid. You're right, actually.
They absolutely do, yeah.
Actually, there is a wonderful document. I say documentary series, but it's like, is it a documentary? It was something called The Future is Wild. Have you ever heard of this?
No, I've not.
So it's a three-part documentary in which they speculate basically they take a scenario where on Earth, all humans and all endangered species all die. And then they work with like biologists and evolutionary scientists and stuff like that to kind of write fan fiction and speculate about what the future of evolution on Earth could be.
Okay. Oh, this is sounding familiar. Maybe I have seen this.
It's been a while. It came out a long time ago.
Yeah.
But near the end of the series, when birds go extinct, the niche of birds is taken over by fish, by like flying fish that breathe air.
Love it.
So
good on you, fish.
Yeah. So it's one of those things. but like, yeah, it's a stylized fish. I'm sorry if we're going on a few tangents here.
No, that's good. We've got a few things to cover, but no, yeah, I totally see that. That's an interesting way to look at it that I never would have put together by critically thinking. I would have been like, yeah, it's a weird bird, but you're right. It could just be a fish.
Yeah. And the thing is that these are like pieces of art. The proportions and everything like that are, you know, they're exaggerated because they're made by humans. And so, and there is another one of these Kimbaya artifacts that looks like a frog, but the proportions are all crazy and it looks like that it could actually fly too.
Everything can fly.
But Ancient Aliens lets that one just be a frog, but they don't let the fish be an airplane. The fish has to be an airplane, but the weird frog can't be. It's just a frog. So
sure,
selective choices and, you know, cherry picking and all that kind of stuff. But again, it's another case of a thing that looks like a thing because we have modern eyes and are looking at it. Like if you were to carve a fish today, probably wouldn't carve it to look like that because it looks too much like an airplane, because we've seen airplanes before. But not so the people who actually made it 1,000 years ago.
Besides, if there were airplanes, where would they go? They would need airports and such, Tristan.
Oh, someone's reading ahead. Yeah, so the other thing too, this came up in the episode of Ancient Aliens where they talked about Vimanas. We did an episode previously on Vimanas, which is sort of like a theorized flywheel-powered hovercraft made by ancient Hindus. And then they were like, well, what are these things? Like they tried to postulate that there was this international network of flying machines that, like, you know, cultural exchange that didn't happen. And, you know, there's no evidence that it did. Mm-hmm. But they were like, well, they would need to be places where they can land. And so they posited that like the Nazca lines could have been airports. We can also refer back to that episode on the Nazca lines.
Absolutely.
But then there was another one, which is a place in Mexico called Monte Alban, which they point out that because the top has been flattened, because it's built on the top of a flattened mountain, that it could be a runway. This is literally how far we're going. This is how far their analysis goes.
Okay. And that is it. It's just that it's flat. And so it could be a runway.
Yeah. I guess they're kind of trying to make the argument that ancient peoples could not possibly flatten the top of a mountain.
Okay. That doesn't seem true to me though.
Yeah. But you know, this one was like on the screen for like a total of maybe 45 seconds. So it was literally, again, this one of those cases where it was just like, they could have landed anywhere. They could have landed on the Nazca lines and we're like, and then you have to be like, but what about, and then they're like, and you could have landed in Monte Alban. Look at how flat it is. Moving on to another thing. And it's like, wait, can we talk again about how you think that, a Zapotec city was an airport?
One second, do you have any evidence, any proof of what you're okay, we're already onto the next topic. Okay, never mind. I don't have time to think about it.
So there's a mystery of how people flattened it, where all that material went. How could, as we're learning very frustratingly as we go through this thing, how could ancient people lift heavy stones?
That is the question that has been asked several times and will continue to be asked on this podcast. And there are many, many ways that people have demonstrated, but I guess it's just impossible to fathom. So we're going to continue asking this question until the day we die.
And it was based on astronomical stuff, which, you know, we've learned that in Mexico there was a high connection between things and the stars, but how could they look at the stars? How could they even think to do that without technology or something? I don't know. This happens a lot, and I think we've talked about this before, about this kind of like argument from verbosity, which is just like throwing so many arguments at somebody at a time that you can't even respond to them all. And if you're not really like watching it with a critical eye, you think, wow, they have such a good case. Look how many cases they have of like things look like airports.
They can just say a whole bunch of stuff. I remember specifically in this show, they're talking about the pyramids, as they talk about the pyramids constantly, but they were talking about how it almost lines up exactly with a compass of north, south, east, and west before the compass was invented. And like the word almost is like so clearly the thing that is, that separates it from being any kind of convincing argument. Like it's almost perfectly lines up. It's like, well, if it doesn't perfectly line up, then it's probably just a coincidence, huh? You think?
Plus, if only there was some sort of, I don't know, like star that
was
in the sky that rose in the east and set in the west.
If only there was some way to tell directions based on some glowy ball of fire in the sky. But no, you need a compass, so never mind.
Yeah, or even if you needed a compass, like no one could have thought to put a lodestone in water and look which way it goes.
Anyway.
So Monte Alban is a place in the Mexican state of Oaxaca.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it is based on a low mountainous range, rises above the Valley of Oaxaca. And it was essentially the like capital city of the Zapotec Empire.
Okay.
Which the Zapotec Empire were just like, gosh, I'm really struggling with my Mesoamerican history here. But about 2 to 2,500 years ago, they were sort of the dominant society there at the time. And there was like, you know, multiple classes because like there's several layers of civilizations with all the deep history that happened in this region.
So a pretty old place.
Yeah. And the thing is that, yeah, the top has been artificially leveled. And the reason that it was probably built on a mountain, which, you know, would be kind of weird, which definitely means it's an airport.
Right.
Or it was meant for defense, because attacking somebody on the top of an airport or on the top of a mountain is difficult.
That is also true. That makes sense. I can't think of too many modern day. I mean, I don't fly that often, but I can't think of too many airports I've been to that have been on the top of mountains. But I'm sure it made sense to some people.
The thing about it that really, like when they say like, oh, how could somebody have flattened something over time or flattened something like this? And then like you look at like how long it took for them to build Monte Alban. It seems that Monte Alban was probably first settled as early as about 500 BCE, so about 2,500 years ago. But then people continued to live there, and it continued to be an important part of that area and built upon and expanded for about 1,000 years.
Okay, so this wasn't like a 2 to 3 year project.
No. This is like a region that was important to Mesoamerica.
Gotcha.
And it's one of the first cities. It's one of the oldest cities in Mesoamerica, but it was there for 1,000 years and was used regularly for 1,000 years, which, you know, that's plenty of time to flatten the top of a mountain.
Yeah. I bet if you just walk around on something for 1,000 years, it flattens it out pretty quick.
There's also that. It turns out if you hit rocks with other rocks, it's actually like you can break them. It takes a lot of work, but you can still do it.
Oh, man, you're blowing my mind here.
So, yeah, it was the center of a large scale expansionist empire that the Oaxacan Highlands, like, pretty much ruled the Oaxacan Highlands for a long time. And they interacted with other Mesoamerican civilizations. So it's like, well regarded. We have a lot of evidence about what these people were like, because we have not only Monte Alban, but like we have like a lot of evidence of like what the Zapotec Empire was like throughout its history. And if they built airports, we probably would have found some of the other ones that they did.
That's always been my biggest critique, I guess, of things about airports and airplanes, is that we find what people believe to be trinkets of airplanes, but we don't actually find the airplanes. And we find lands that could have been airports, but no real like structures in them that seem to support, like no hangars for airplanes or anything like that. It just feels like you're just jumping to a lot of conclusions, you know?
Yeah. And like the thing is, when they say it on the show, they'll be like, oh yeah, this is this, you know, look at this, this could be that. And then it's like, okay, but like if you ask anybody who's taken their life to study the Zapotec people, we know quite a bit about the Zapotec people.
Yeah.
Like it's like they're one of the more well-known Mesoamerican civilizations, and there's no indication that they invented the internal combustion engine or electricity or steel or, if I recall, even like metalworking for the most part. Like there's a lot of like precursor inventions you need to have before you can make an airplane that were also not there. And then when you think about how this is a society that's very preoccupied with astrology and the stars, mm-hmm. and then you're like, well, why is it like all flat? And like, why are these things like, if you have a religion that is very preoccupied with like the location of stars and planets, probably want to, you know, have a large sky to look out into. And if you want to build a defensible city, building it on a mountain ridge is not a bad idea.
So a lot of reasons why this probably wasn't an airport.
No. And but while we're on the topic of Monte Alban, I just want to point out that it's also an archaeological site that's under threat, because I want to point out that it's important, these things.
Absolutely.
Because the thing about Monte Alban that makes it a little weird is that there are four different municipalities that all have part of the site in their like kind of jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And the major issue is that essentially urban expansion. Cities are starting to move closer and closer to Monte Alban, the site. And because there's, you know, fighting over jurisdiction about what city is going to maintain and manage it, there's a lot of like conflict trying to figure out how to get this stuff to how to like protect this site while cities are getting closer to it, essentially.
Right. Well, the good news is that because it is built at the top of a mountain, it's a pretty defensible position to fight this fight on. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah. I mean, if any of those cities need a small airport, I got the location for you.
We gotcha.
But yeah, that's Monte Alban. Like, it was just like mentioned really quickly, and it's like a really cool Mesoamerican archaeological site that just was just briefly mentioned, and then they moved on.
Yeah, and it sucks that it's kind of under attack in this sort of weird urban way. That's not great. Yeah, these are important places.
A big subplot of this episode that we, or this show that we do, is that all of these wonderful, beautiful things that humans have made are all under threat because we just can't stop driving cars over them or building cities near them or going to take pictures of them for Instagram or something like that.
I am never gonna, anytime that you tell me a tourist destroyed something, it will never cease to peeve me off so hard.
Yeah. Now we could talk about flying carpets.
Let's talk about flying carpets. All right, so here's the thing, Tristan. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I get this straight, though. All right, we've talked about planes that are really fish, maybe. We've talked about airports that are just cool, flat pieces of land. But there's got to be something out there, some sort of cool thing related to flying, related to aviation. You got to tell me that some ancient civilization, some ancient technology exists where people could fly. Tell me that.
I hate to burst your bubble. But
no.
According to Ancient Aliens, flying carpets, which are a common icon in Middle Eastern and, you know, North African mythology, are actually flying machines. So
okay, we're getting somewhere. I like this.
Now, we're not going to the Middle East for this one. We're going to a place called Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at a certain book called the Kebra Nagast, which is a very holy book for the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. So I know I just opened a whole bunch of doors because I know that knowledge of Ethiopian religion is not exactly the most widespread thing in the world. But so Ethiopia is one of the oldest Christian countries in Africa, and their like form of Christianity is, you know, fairly old and fairly unique. And one of the important books of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church and to Ethiopians in general is a 14th century book called the Kebra Nagast, which is sort of a national epic of Ethiopia, which for non-historians, a national epic is basically like a really, really long book that describes the history of a country.
Gotcha.
Now, Ethiopians, and also actually Rastafarians as well, make the claim that, now we're going to go into some Bible stories here, that there is a direct line between Ethiopia and King Solomon and the Queen of Sheba.
Okay, all right. Well, we're getting into some Bible studies. Good thing I'm wearing my Sunday best.
And like, for example, to this day, the Ethiopians still claim that they do have the Ark of the Covenant. It's in a temple that is guarded by a certain individual who like passes it down generations to generations.
I know there's another ancient astronaut theory that says the Ark of the Covenant is a miniature nuclear reactor. So
I can't wait for that episode. But in the Kebra Nagast, there is a scene where the Queen of Sheba receives a flying carpet from King Solomon. Mm-hmm. And despite saying that it's a flying carpet, they're like, well, if you like reinterpret words, because if like, you know, if a throne, as we saw in the Book of Ezekiel episode, if a throne can just be a flying object, then obviously a flying carpet could be a spaceship, and they just lacked the words to describe what it really was.
That's exactly right.
It was the original chariots of the gods. And, you know, flying carpets show up throughout history in sort of North Africa, the Middle East, and also Ethiopia. And of course, Christianity is a Middle Eastern religion, so it came to Ethiopia. So there's obviously some cultural transfer going on here.
Sure.
So, you know, you might be familiar with Arabian Nights, the, you know, classic.
The first epic song from Aladdin. Yeah.
But like flying carpets do feature in a lot of this region's myth. And there's this claim that Solomon had mountains. So obviously these are places where he would like land. These are his, you know, places. And they even went as far to say that King Solomon used these to fly as far as Tibet. I don't know where that comes from. This was out of everything that we've done on this show, the hardest thing to dig up anything on, because it seems that it's just not a thing that like Ethiopian religion scholars just did not step up to the plate to address ancient aliens.
Okay.
Experts on the Kebra Naga, and also knowledge in the West of the Ethiopian Orthodox Church is also limited in a lot of ways.
So let me see if I understand what you're saying. It's possible that someone just said that King Solomon flew on these as far as Tibet, and there's no, like, it's not like written anywhere, but someone just said it and they're like, yeah, cool, sounds legit.
I think somewhere in the Kebra Nagast it says that Solomon went very far away.
Gotcha.
To the east. And I guess maybe they said there are mountains, because the mountains played a role in this whole thing, and Tibet has a lot of mountains.
Fair enough.
But yeah, according to the Kebra Nagast, the Queen of Sheba and King Solomon had a child named King Menelik I, who was the first sort of emperor of Ethiopia.
Okay.
So, and there's a references that they used flying carpets to travel to the Middle East, which could be a metaphor for opening up trade or something like that. But like I said, it's really hard to chew on this because it's just saying, what if flying carpet is flying machine? Then it looks really impressive, doesn't it? like look at this flying carpet. What if that was a machine?
What if that was a piece of alien technology? Anything you can point to that is like, you're right. It could just be like a metaphor for something. It could just be like poetic language. It could just be a storytelling. But pointing to anything and being like, but what if this was alien spaceship? What about that? Then, okay, sure. It sounds interesting, I guess, but you're not taking into account anything about the historical or cultural context.
So this happens way too often where they're like, it says here that they had a flying carpet. Well, what if the word carpet was machine instead? Then it looks like they're flying an alien ship. And it's like, right. Okay, cool. Yeah, I guess if I can change the words and things, I can change their meaning too. Yeah.
Absolutely. It turns out when you change words to sound cool, it does sound cool.
Mm-hmm. So this is another thing that I thought was like a bit of a lesson to talk about, which is that there's this difference between documentary evidence and physical evidence.
Right.
Now, as a historian, we work almost exclusively in documentary evidence. It's looking at, you know, piles and piles and piles of writings to sort of corroborate what's going on and figure out the evidence. But also there's documentary evidence and then there's physical evidence. And again, where's the flying machine? Where's the carpet? Or even like a lot of this is, I don't want to step on anybody's religious beliefs or anything like that, but this is like a lot of this is like biblical era things.
Sure.
And so like you know, there's articles of faith here and like, you know, there's no skeleton of the Queen of Sheba or King Solomon, as far as I know.
Sure. I mean, I grew up religious and something that I even went to a Bible college for a bit. And something that we learned is that sometimes stories exist just to serve as metaphors, just to serve as guiding principles, but they aren't necessarily literal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously people have different opinions on that, but that's what I had studied in my field. And so it's hard for me to take stuff like this exactly literally. I think sometimes it is just language to help tell a moral tale.
Yeah. And just like with that fucking bird, there would be leftover artifacts of the flying carpet's construction, maintenance, or infrastructure, as we've kind of mentioned over and over again.
Yeah.
One reference in one book is a massive claim, but saying something about the world does not do that.
Yeah.
I couldn't, this is the thing, I couldn't even find people debunking this. It's literally just reading into something based on motivated reasoning, as far as I can see.
It's frustrating. I mean, I'm glad we get to do episodes like this where we can touch on a handful of different topics that are so small that we can merge them all together into this kind of overarching theme of, you can't just take anything that you find in any historical context and then just go, but what if it was aliens? I know that you can do that.
You can make a very popular history channel show.
You actually, you know what? I'm all kinds of wrong. You actually can do that. And it's pretty successful when you do that. But I think if you want to look at the world in a more accurate way, as accurate as you can, I think it takes a little bit more involvement than just saying like, but I bet it's probably aliens though.
Mm-hmm. And so this is, again, one of the cases I think we've talked about is just ancient aliens throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks. What I find is that they have these instances where they just say something, give a bit of speculation, and then move on. And that they tend to move from subject to subject really fast when they're making more and more flimsy arguments.
Yeah, it's like a fast-talking salesman where you don't have time to really think about what they're saying. They're just saying a whole bunch of stuff that sounds kind of good and kind of interesting, and they're not leaving you any sort of like breathing room to really get the cogs turning in your head where you're like, but wait a minute, hold on, what did you say? Oh, never mind. It almost makes you feel like you're slow because they already moved on, and like if you're still stuck on something, then it makes you feel like, oh, well, I'm just not as smart as them because I'm still behind. It's kind of a gross trick. I don't like it.
And there's a little line about this kind of thing that comes from the person who got me into skeptic stuff back before skeptic meant something very different.
Sure.
But also by a skeptic activist / potential committer of wire fraud.
Uh-oh.
A guy named Brian Dunning said this one quote that I think is pretty a good explanation about this, which is that you can stack cow pies as high as you like, you're not going to get a bar of gold. But that is, that's my grab bag.
I love it. Tristan, thank you so much. I think this was a really fun episode. If you, a listener, liked this sort of grab bag episode, let us know. Let us know by tweeting us at probsnotalien. It's probsnotaliens, plural, on Twitter. And leaving reviews on Apple Music, wherever you can. We want those delicious, those juicy 4-star reviews, if you can. And yeah, just let us know. Tristan, where can people find you on the internet?
You can go to Step Back History on YouTube or Tristan PJ on Twitter. How about you?
You can find me on my YouTube channel, NerdSync, NerdSync, if you like some comic book history and things like that. Or my personal Twitter, at Scott Nicewander. And please, friends, tell your friends about this show. I know that I just said that we are friends, but Tristan and I already know about this show. Go tell your friends, your other friends about the show, because it's really the best way that you can spread the word about. We're a very new podcast. We're on episode 10 right now, I think. So, you know, go tell people. I think this is a fun show. I enjoy doing it. I hope you like listening to it.
Yep. And we'll see you guys next time, because the truth is out there. Probably.